Hello, it's Tuesday, the 30th of June, and this is Israel in 10, the Misgav Daily Brief. I'm Laura Sellier in Tel Aviv. A stalemate, unrealistic, a shot in the dark. The new agreement between Israel and Lebanon has its fair share of detractors. The path to peace may be long, but as Hussein Abdul Hussein, research fellow at the FDD and author of The Arab Case for Israel, tells me, there is now a real plan in place to disarm Hezbollah. And this is very much Lebanon's last chance to reclaim sovereignty from Iran. Hear our conversation in a moment, but first the headlines. Iran and the United States are due to resume talks in Doha today. President Trump announced on Truth Social that the meeting would be taking place. He's sending special envoys Jared Kushner and Steve Witkoff. But Iran says no meeting with American officials has been planned and no negotiations are happening. Last night, President Pezeshkian said Iran was sending a delegation to Qatar, but that was to collect $6 billion in frozen funds. Pezeshkian has also lashed out at hardliners who have criticized the interim deal with the US amid reports of a schism between political figures and the IRGC. He says he has the full backing of Supreme Leader Mojtaba Khamenei. Well, the IRGC says two of their members have been killed and two others wounded after a shooting in the western province of Kerman Shah. Authorities are calling it a terrorist attack and have launched an investigation into who was behind it. Iran has warned France not to interfere in the Strait of Hormuz after President Macron announced plans to work with Oman on mine-clearing operations. Iran's deputy foreign minister wrote on social media that mine-clearing operations in the strait would be carried out exclusively by Iran, with no other country allowed to intervene. Well, the disruption in the Strait of Hormuz has set Europe up for a difficult winter. European gas reserves are on course to hit their lowest levels since records began 15 years ago, with the conflict with Iran adding to pressure already created by the war in Ukraine. And efforts to secure Hamas's disarmament appear to be stuck, with the group's leader in Gaza reportedly taking a tougher stance in negotiations. Israeli media reports that Khalil al-Haya is disputing what qualifies heavy and light weapons. Under phase two of President Trump's plan, Gaza is to be de-radicalized and demilitarized, with an international stabilization force taking over from the IDF. Well, before we get to today's conversation, a reminder, you can sponsor Israel in 10. Just drop us a line at misgavdailybrief@gmail.com. Now here's Hussein Abdul Hussein. What makes this agreement between Israel and Lebanon different to any previous agreement?
There are many things that sets it apart. First and foremost, the recognition of Lebanon, just the direct talks to Israel, recognizing that this is the way to sort out differences between the two sides. And also, the text of the agreement suggests that if all these differences were settled, then the two countries will be going down the road of peace, which is something that the Lebanese haven't said in a very long time, at least since 1983.
Right, because technically the two countries are still at war, aren't they?
The May 17, 1983 agreement was ratified in parliament. So it was signed by the two sides, but it didn't become a treaty because at the time, Hafez Assad, whose troops were occupying Lebanon, threatened the Lebanese president, Amin Jmayel. And Jmayel ended up not signing the agreement. But the two countries got close to having their agreement in 1983, and it just didn't happen. So this is the closest the two sides got since that time. The only official agreement between the two sides is 1949, the truce agreement. And you add to it a dozen UN Security Council resolutions that govern the relations between the two sides.
Now, there is still a long way to go before there is peace between the two countries. And sadly, we know what happened to Prime Minister Jamayel. Is there a risk, heaven forbid, that the Lebanese politicians who have signed this agreement could themselves be at risk?
Well, there's definitely a lot of risk. President Aoun, Prime Minister Salam, the chief of the biggest Christian bloc in parliament, Samir Jaja, all of these guys are sticking their neck out. They're risking their lives. Jaja was the, they tried to kill him in the past. He doesn't really move much in the country. So Hezbollah is not an easy foe to deal with. They do use violence and assassination to get what they want. So everyone in Lebanon who is really supporting this agreement is putting their lives at risk.
And are they willing to do that because of a change in the position the American administration has taken compared with previous administrations?
Well, absolutely. Look, these Lebanese wanted peace with Israel for the longest time. The question is, when will they come out and support it? This relies totally on the U.S. side. When they see a U.S. administration that's supportive of such a process, that's supportive of Lebanese Israeli peace, then they do it. When they see a Washington that's reluctant and Washington that's shopping for better deals, for example, if America gets a better deal with Iran, then why not throw Lebanon under the bus? When they feel that such an event is unfolding, then they balk. They go back to hiding. Thankfully, over the past 2 weeks, there was a stretch when the Lebanese felt, oh no, you know, America has just sold us to Iran. And thankfully, since then, things have been reversed and have changed. And now we're back on track. The Lebanese track looks much stronger and robust than the US-Iranian track.
Now, there are a lot of naysayers, and they're saying, number one, the Lebanese army is completely infiltrated by Hezbollah members, so it's very difficult to separate the two forces. And number two, you've got a million Shia in southern Lebanon, and a lot of them do support Hezbollah, and they always will, and they're not going anywhere. So how do you get around those two obstacles?
First of all, if the agreement was so worthless, then why is Hezbollah throwing a tantrum and going out of his way trying to kill it? So the fact that Hezbollah is really not happy with what's going on tells us that this is a big thing. And they know that this is a big thing. And first and foremost, it puts Hezbollah out of any legal circle that Hezbollah wants to be part of. We know that Hezbollah is in violation of half a dozen UN Security Council resolutions stipulating that it should be disarmed. UNSC Resolution 1559, 1701. So Hezbollah stands against international law and order. Number two, for Hezbollah to continue to stand against the international community, it has to have the Lebanese state on its side. So whenever the international community asks the Lebanese to disarm Hezbollah, Hezbollah will say, listen, the Lebanese government is okay with this. This is a domestic process. You cannot intervene in our affairs and our sovereignty. Hezbollah doesn't have either. It doesn't have the international community. It doesn't have the Lebanese state. And this is huge. This hasn't happened to Hezbollah in the past, and they know it. And that's why they're throwing a tantrum to try to stop it. So this said, this tells you that whatever we have now is a lot, and Hezbollah doesn't like it. Now, can the Lebanese army really disarm Hezbollah? I think it can. I'm not sure that it wants to. Maybe it doesn't have enough numbers. Maybe it doesn't have enough officers loyal to the state. Maybe it has a lot of officers that are loyal to Hezbollah. All of this can be true. But the fact that the agreement, the way we have it now, is that the Lebanese armed forces are asked to hold territory that has already been cleared and that they get from the IDF. So the agreement is not really asking the LIF to do the job. All the agreement is asking the LIF to do is to take over territory, hold it, and make sure that Hezbollah doesn't sneak back again into it. And if this works, then the whole agreement works. Then, you know, after the two zones, the pilot zones that they just declared yesterday or the day before, after these two zones, you give another two zones and then another two zones. And then lo and behold, you'll have all the territory between Beirut and the border with Israel clear of Hezbollah and under the control of the Lebanese army, which means that Lebanon has sort of gotten back its sovereignty.
This could be Lebanon's last chance to claw back its sovereignty. And there is an irony, isn't it, that in order to do that, it needs to make peace with its arch enemy Israel.
Well, absolutely. This is probably the last chance for Lebanon. I don't think they'll come back from not going through this process. It is ironic that Israel and Lebanon are now aligned. Their national interests are aligned against Hezbollah and Iran. But I'm happy that the Lebanese and the Lebanese government are finally pursuing their interests, not their emotions. You know, we know that there's a lot of bad blood between the two sides over the past 75, 80 years. But at least the Lebanese are now thinking like adults. They're thinking whatever happened has happened. Moving forward requires peace, which will give stability for both countries. And especially in the case of Lebanon, it will allow the Lebanese to grow their economy and move forward.
That's it. That's your Israel in 10 for today. Thank you for watching or listening. And please do subscribe using the link below. Goodbye.